This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening. Welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiyes Wuhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
And a dollar spent in preparedness is worth $1,000 spent on response.
That was Mike Ryan, the WHO Executive Director for Health Emergencies, on the need to pay more attention to pandemic preparedness. Details coming up also. French President Emmanuel Macron has arrived in Guinea-Bissau's capital on the last leg of his three-nation tour of West Africa. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov has just wrapped up a major tour of Africa, seeking allies amid global anger and isolation over food shortages following Russia's invasion of Ukraine. VOA senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports.
Resuming shipments of Ukrainian and Russian grain has been the number one topic at each stop of Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov's Africa tour this week, like this one in the Republic of Congo town of Oyo. Jean-Claude Gakoso is the Republic of Congo's foreign minister.
We are pleased to welcome Sergei Lavrov, who comes with good news, including this agreement that was signed in Turkey, sponsored by the United Nations and Turkey, which should revive the marketing of Ukrainian wheat across the Black Sea and through the Bosphorus Strait.
Russia's invasion of Ukraine on February 24th and its blockade of Ukraine's ports has massively disrupted grain shipments, trapping millions of tons of grain and causing global commodity prices to soar. The United Nations says an additional 47 million people are now facing acute hunger, with countries in Africa especially hard hit. Lavrov began his Africa tour in Egypt on Sunday, reassuring his host that their orders for Russian grain deliveries will be met, and blaming Western sanctions on Russia for the shortages. Meanwhile, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said Russia's bombing of Odessa on Saturday puts the Istanbul grain deal brokered by the UN last week in jeopardy. And Zelensky said Moscow always finds a way to renege on its promises. Lavrov said the Odessa strike would not impact grain deliveries. An expert tells VOA that Lavrov aims to shape the narrative on the food crisis during his visit to Egypt, Republic of Congo, Uganda, and Ethiopia. Natalia Bugayova is a Russia research fellow at the Institute for the Study of War.
Russia's blockade of grain in Ukraine's ports and deliberate destruction of Ukrainian agricultural capabilities is at the center of this effort, as Russia is trying to falsely link Ukraine's grain export with sanctions against Russia and to falsely frame Ukraine as a party, as a responsible party in the global food crisis.
Another expert confirmed that Africa was struck especially hard by the disruption in grain supplies caused by the invasion. Susan Stigand is the Director of Africa Programs at the United States Institute of Peace.
Certainly, the region is feeling the impact and the implications of food insecurity. The USAID Administrator, Ambassador Samantha Power, was just out in the region and announced $1.3 billion of assistance.
Stigand told VOA that Africa depends on Russia for about 40% of its grain supplies, while about 60% of the world's uncultivated land is in Africa. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
French President Emmanuel Macron has arrived in Guinea-Bissau's capital on the last leg of his three-nation tour of West Africa. He earlier visited Cameroon and Benin. He was greeted by President Omaro Sissoko Embalo, the current president of ECOWAS, the Economic Community of West African States. The Associated Press notes that it's the third time the two have met this year, though it's the first trip by Macron to the country. Macron is seeking to further commercial and security ties with West African leaders. This as Paris continues to withdraw its troops from Mali, the site of a spreading and chronic jihadist insurgency. Earlier in the week, Macron criticized Russia's invasion of Ukraine, which has led to grain shortages in Africa and contributed to growing inflation. Paris has also criticized Russia for supplying mercenaries from the Wagner group in conflicts in the region. Macron accused Moscow of using hybrid warfare around the world, a combination of misinformation, energy, and food shortages to gain global influence. That includes what he terms illegitimate juntas in the Central African Republic and Mali, and also said that Russia is, in his words, one of the last colonial imperial powers. France is working to strengthen West African militaries with training and equipment and encouraging them to take the lead in the fight against Islamic militants. Critics say he has not focused on human rights abuses in the region. The World Health Organization is calling for greater investment in the development of new vaccines to keep pace with the rapidly evolving variants of the coronavirus. WHO emphasizes the need to make new vaccines equitably available in all countries. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
As world attention is focused on the monkeypox outbreak, WHO Chief Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus warns the COVID-19 pandemic is far from over. He says new tools must be developed to curb this deadly disease, while public health measures that are known to work must be maintained and strengthened. He says one of the most effective ways to save lives is to vaccinate the right groups first. By this, he means health workers, older people, and others at risk groups, such as those with underlying health conditions. He notes COVID-19 cases and deaths have been increasing for the last 5 weeks. The latest WHO report puts the number of confirmed global cases at nearly 566 million, including more than 6.3 million deaths. Tedros says several countries also are reporting increasing hospitalizations following waves of transmission driven by Omicron subvariants.
While vaccines have saved countless lives, they have not substantially reduced transmission. So it's vital for governments and the private sector to continue collaborating and investing in the development of new vaccines that prevent both infection and disease.
Tedros says vaccines should be developed that can be delivered more easily, such as through nasal sprays or drops. The WHO Executive Director for Health Emergencies, Mike Ryan, says more attention must be paid to pandemic preparedness. He says risks from diseases such as COVID-19, monkeypox, Marburg, and polio are accelerating because nations tend to be reactive rather than active in tackling these diseases.
I think we need to really take a much more systematic look at how we prioritize pathogens for the future, and then how we invest. It will cost money, and it does cost money, but it is a fantastic investment in protecting us down the line. And a dollar spent on preparedness is worth $1,000 spent on response.
WHO Chief Tedros agrees. He urges all countries to assess and strengthen their readiness and response plans for future waves of transmission. He adds that as new vaccines and other COVID-19 tools are developed, it is crucial they are equitably available in all countries. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
A senior U.S. official voiced cautious hope yesterday that Ethiopian peace talks will start after next month's election in neighboring Kenya, which has played a key diplomatic role. Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed in June raised the possibility of talks with the Tigray People Liberation Front, TPLF, to try to end a brutal war that erupted in northern Ethiopia in November 2020. He wanted the African Union, based in Addis Ababa, to take the lead in mediation, a stance rejected by the rebels, who instead want to negotiate under Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta. According to the French news agency AFP, Mike Hammer, the new U.S. envoy for the Horn of Africa, will travel to Ethiopia this week and will be having discussions with the parties to see what can be done to move forward on the talks. Because of the war in Tigray, the United States accused Ethiopia, a longtime ally, of ethnic cleansing, and President Joe Biden, as of January 1st, expelled Ethiopia from a key trade pact that offered duty-free access for most goods. The decision, however, galvanized the Ethiopian-American diaspora, which has led a lobbying campaign to return the country to the pact, the African Growth and Opportunity Act, or AGOA. U.S. Senator Chris Van Hollen of Maryland, who has a large Ethiopian-American community, says freezing AGOA impacts regular people, farmers, and entrepreneurs, but it does not specifically punish the government. Molly Fee, the top U.S. diplomat for Africa, said the Biden administration was looking closely at whether to restore Ethiopia's participation in AGOA. The acting head of the United Nations mission in Eastern Congo said a joint investigation with national police will examine the shooting deaths of three peacekeepers and a dozen Congolese civilians during anti-UN protests this week. Kassim Diagani, the deputy chief of MONUSCO, the French acronym for the UN Stabilization Mission in the Democratic Republic of Congo, said the investigation will determine exactly where the shooting came from. Reuters reported Tuesday that its reporter saw peacekeepers shoot dead two protesters as people threw rocks, vandalized and burned the UN compound in Goma, the provincial capital of Congo's North Kivu province. Diagani said the UN has the forensics capability to trace its bullets and is flying in a doctor from Kinshasa to conduct autopsies and extract the bullets for investigation. Protesters clashed with troops on Wednesday for a third straight day, but Diagani said the situation has cooled from the previous day and that the mission remains vigilant. UN peacekeeping chief Jean-Pierre Lacroix, who is currently in Mali, will travel to Kinshasa on Friday to meet with officials and then continue to Goma. The UN has warned that the M23 rebel group, which was defeated by the Congolese army and special MONUSCO forces in 2013, started to re-emerge in November of last year and is well armed and equipped. The government of Zambia says it's on the brink of an historic debt relief deal with its many international creditors, the largest being China. The Southern African nation, where copper is the backbone of the economy, owes other countries and international lending institutions about $17 billion. According to some economists, the terms of the deal for Lusaka could set a precedent for Africa. Darren Taylor has more.
In 2020, when Edgar Lungu was still president, Zambia became the first country in the COVID-19 era to default on its foreign debt. When its new leader, Hakainde Hichilema, took office in August last year, he said he'd inherited an empty treasury and vowed to reduce Zambia's debt burden. To save money, he's cancelled public projects that would have cost $2 billion. Hichilema's tabled a bill to limit borrowing to 65% of GDP and established a debt management office tasked with ensuring future debt is sustainable. It clearly was not under Lungu, who borrowed $6.6 billion, mostly in secret, from Chinese financiers, and he's accused of corruption, which he denies. Economists say this prevented other creditors from giving debt relief to Zambia, as they were concerned Lusaka would abuse the money saved or use it to pay back its Chinese loans. Zambian economist Claudia Pollen leads the country's Consumer Unit Trust Society.
The debt crisis is compounded by the fact that we've just had bad politics with a combination of just bad economics. So political will obviously becomes quite important, the will to be able to achieve fiscal discipline and prudence, reducing spending appetite, and fully really doing a project appraisal provision to see exactly how the management of this debt is really changing the lives of people.
She says lack of professionalism and competence in the ranks of Zambian officials in charge of finances have contributed greatly to her country's debt crisis.
Legal reform, of course, on the loans and guarantees needs to be undertaken, as well as the information bill, because currently we don't have the sufficient information to be able to do the necessary tracking. And then institutional mechanisms, things like autonomy and integrity in public institutions, including Ministry of Finance, line ministries, all these need to be held to account.
Pollen says a debt deal won't matter much unless these urgent reforms happen to ensure that Zambia doesn't again default on repayments in years to come. Over and above everything else, she urges Hichilema's administration to be open and transparent about debts it incurs so that public trust in its ability to handle taxpayer money is restored.
We know that the government has been making huge efforts in terms of releasing public debt figures up to, say, June 2022. But there's also a need for authorities to be able to make this public disclosure, a semi-annual activity of June and December of each year. If we're talking about tracking mechanisms, these have to be quite consistent.
She says Zambia, like other African countries, must ultimately take sole responsibility for getting into debt.
Government also should be able to constitute a homegrown debt sustainability assessment to ensure that the risk of debt distress is averted in a timely manner without the complete reliance on the IMF and the World Bank assessment, as it has been the case.
Financial analysts expect the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, to ratify a $1.4 billion loan to Zambia as soon as a debt restructuring deal is reached. But they say the IMF would also need assurances that Hichilema's administration has a solid, credible plan to revive Zambia's copper mining sector, which declined under Lungu. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. I'm Ihayes Wuhib in Washington. Please note we have moved our programs from voanews.com to voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. Find us on voaafrica.com. Italy's Angola investment gas company Eni says a consortium of energy firms has made a final investment decision to proceed with the development of two natural gas fields in Angola. Project execution activities, according to the French news agency AFP, will start this year, and by 2026, production is expected to reach a peak of approximately 4 billion cubic meters per year. The project, the cost of which was not disclosed, will include an onshore processing facility as well. Included in the new gas consortium are the local affiliates of U.S. energy firm Chevron, Capgoc, Angolan state-held energy firm Son Angol, Britain's BP, and France's Total Energies, with Eni operating the overall project. Italy signed an agreement earlier this year to help Angola develop new natural gas projects. Rome has urgently sought to secure alternative suppliers of natural gas as Russia has reduced deliveries to Europe following the imposition of Western sanctions over the Kremlin's invasion of Ukraine. The younger brother of the late head of state of Burkina Faso, Thomas Sankara, says former President Blaise Compaoré should have submitted to justice before asking for forgiveness. Compaoré, then a close friend of Sankara, led a coup in 1987 during which Sankara was assassinated. He went on to rule Burkina Faso for 27 years. A military court earlier this year found Kampaore complicit in the assassination of Sankara and sentenced him to life in absentia. On Tuesday, Kampaore apologized to all Burkinabe and the Sankara family for, in his words, all the acts I may have committed during my tenure. Daybreak host James Batty spoke with Paul Sankara, the younger brother of the late Sankara, who says his family is not against forgiveness or reconciliation, but Kampaore must first respect the military court's decision.
No, it's a couple of things. The first one is we need to respect one of the strongest foundations of the nation, which is the justice. After 34 years of Thomas Sankara's assassination and his, we had a justice last year, and the verdict has been done by the justice. The best way for him would have been to respond to the justice. But the second level, this letter that has been released recently from Blaise Compaoré asking forgiveness, no one cannot give me the evidence, the proof that it comes from him. And you can't send your daughter and an Ivorian minister to read and ask for forgiveness. Is it still Ivorian or is Burkinabe? I don't know what, it's blurry. So that's exactly the first thing I need to say. We not against any reconciliation process or forgiveness or unity of the nation. No, how we do it, that's the point.
So Paul, former President Kompari was found guilty, and then he was sentenced. But we noticed that earlier this year, he returned to Burkina Faso. What do you make of the fact that he returned, and how come did they not hold him to serve the sentence? Is there some kind of relationship between him and the military junta there?
It shows exactly how things are not honest and true. That's a good evidence. Who had the initiative to send him from Ivory Coast to Burkina, one. Second, the current government in Burkina Faso, military that came in power through military coup, accepted. I don't know where they're trying to go with this approach. Or it means some people or some families are above the law. There's something wrong here. And the popular, it is a justice for all of us or justice for some of us. We're not against the forgiveness and the reconciliation, not at all in unity. But let's figure out how we're going to do it in a strong way in order to avoid repeating the same mistake.
Former President Kompari is asking for forgiveness. Although you have mentioned several steps that you think he should have taken, let's assume he takes those steps. Will you or your family be able to forgive him?
It's a question of different consideration in order to give you a correct answer. Not just Sankara's family, but other victims. Those families have certain custom and tradition. You have to get the point of view of different members of the families. After 37 years, families were dismantled in Burkina, out of Africa, Europe and the U.S. So you can just few of the members of a given family take a decision. Once again, we're not against forgiveness. We are for the unity.
That was Paul Sankara, the younger brother of the late head of state of Burkina Faso, Thomas Sankara, speaking with Daybreak's James Batty. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Adrius Rigas, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05.